Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. Not necessarily. They're my views. They're the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us this evening David Sibley, and we're going to be talking about something that I think is very important. Now, there seems to be little question at all that we're going to war with Iraq. Anybody who doubts that the current administration is intent upon going to Iraq, no matter what happens over there, and I certainly have no sympathy for Saddam Hussein. He was a wicked man when we backed him in the 1980s. He was a wicked man when we left him in power in 1991. He was a wicked man in 1993 when the Iraqi military wanted to overthrow him. And, of course, we betrayed the Iraqi military. That's covered in a book called See No Evil by Robert Baer, CIA station chief in northern Iraq in 1995. The same thing happened again in 1995. We kept Saddam Hussein in power when the military wanted to overthrow him. And, of course, here we are in the year 2002. And it's only a matter of time before we send our boys in to suffer and bleed and die there in the sands of Iraq and in Baghdad and Basra to overthrow the current regime that we kept in power for so long. And it really doesn't make any logical sense. Unless, of course, there's another agenda behind what's going on. Well, if you read the, as I do, and I'm reading now these articles being written by the Islamic militants, talking about if you kill our people, we will kill your people. If you attack our cities, we will attack your cities. And then, of course, realizing that there really is a threat of biological or chemical or perhaps even nuclear war attacks here in America. And certainly our government is preparing for it. They've got all sorts of underground shelters for their people, the upper echelon, the elite, and for their families. Oh, they'll be well cared for in the underground shelters that have been prepared all up and down the East Coast and the West Coast here. I know that certainly there's some up north of us in the Santa Rosa area. That they have their underground shelters for, I'm sure, highly placed officials here on the West Coast. The trouble is that there are no underground shelters, or is there any good preparation for the American people? Now, if you go to Chris Ruddy's website, which is Newsmax.com, he has several articles there about FEMA's plan, where they're apparently putting out a $300 million contract to get plans for developing relocation camps for hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Americans, which will be ready by the year 2004 or 2005. And the question is, what do they know that the average American doesn't know about what the future holds? Why are they planning on relocation camps for Americans? What is going to happen that most people have no grasp of? And that's why we're going to be putting on a series of programs with our guest this evening, Mr. David Sibley. To begin talking about the fact that the American people are going to have to start looking after themselves and prepare to protect their families and their loved ones and even their friends and neighbors in the difficult times that may lie ahead. Now, I don't know what's going to happen, but I will tell you that the Islamic radicals are talking about attacking the United States if we attack Iraq. Do they have the capacity to do it? Well, at least if reading that I've done of books that have been very carefully suppressed in America are accurate. I'm speaking of the writings of Joseph Badansky, who is the director of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare. And in his 1993 book, attack on America and the West, which is totally suppressed in America, and you can't even get a copy here, to my knowledge. I had to go to England to get my copy. Why, he talks about the terrorist cells that were here in 1990, ready to be released. Of course, the orders were given that they were not to be active at that time, and although Saddam Hussein hoped to mobilize them, he wasn't allowed to. But they're still here. These people have married many times American women. They have families. They fit into the community. It would appear like they're anybody else, but they are totally dedicated to the Islamic cause. David Sipley has certainly been very concerned, and he shares my concern about the fact that most Americans are really unprepared. David, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing just fine. Well, why don't you share your thoughts with our listeners this evening?
Where do we start?
Well, why do we start? Just why are you concerned? Do you really think there something could happen here in America? Because most Americans don't believe that, but I do, and I know you do as well.
Their stated goal is to destroy America and its economy. They've already taken one good shot in September. We know they're quite capable. What do they have coming up in the second act? The American people have been standing literally flat-footed, not thinking about the consequences of what another attack of that size, or what was the gentleman who just recently came out and said the next attack will be spectacular, one of our own officials?
Right.
Well, spectacular is what you'd call French for get ready, the trouble's coming. And how long can you go with the infrastructure that supports you on a daily basis at a standstill? And maybe it's in standstills in some areas for months, if not halves of years at a time.
Well, I think that these things could happen, certainly if we had a biological attack in America. And, of course, that would be probably the easiest thing for them to do. And they've been studying and wondering how to do this for a long time. And certainly our leaders feel that there is a very real problem of a biological attack on America. Now, we could talk about many of the implications of this and where the our enemies might get the material to use against the American cities. But what would happen, say, you live down there and adjacent to Los Angeles, what would happen if there were a biological attack in Los Angeles? What do you think would happen there as far as the people are concerned?
It would be total chaos. I used the analogy on a holiday weekend when 2-4% of the people want to leave the L.A. basin to go to Vegas, San Francisco, out to the desert. In a 12 to 18-hour period, it's total gridlock. Now imagine when every one of them want to get out at the same time. Nobody would get out except a handful of people that were on the edges and had their wits about them to get gone.
Sort of like when somebody in a theater yells fire and everybody panics and stampedes and really an awful lot of people get hurt or damaged, or sometimes they don't even get out at all.
That's right. Only those that were near the exits and the first ones out had the opportunity to get to safety. And the same thing applies here. There are misconceptions by people that the governments have just trucks loaded with food and equipment to come to their aid and rescue is a total fallacy. It is not true.
And this is the thing. At one time, we were very well prepared for perhaps a nuclear strike or for an attack on America. And that all these old Mobile Field hospitals and supplies have been simply eliminated. We have no defense for America because we've been operating under the foolish concept of mutual assured destruction. In other words, you attack us, we'll attack you, and everybody will die. So nobody would be that stupid. But to attack us, and yet, of course, Russia and Communist China have certainly underground shelters, enough to protect almost all of their people, and they have vast food supplies, and they have vast medical supplies, and all the other things they would need for a prolonged war. If we were attacked by, say, some of the Islamic radicals, who would we attack? If there were, most of them were from Saudi Arabia, would we attack Saudi Arabia? We certainly didn't after the attack on September 11th last year. We attacked Afghanistan. If most of the people were to have come from Pakistan, would we attack Pakistan? And, of course, we wouldn't know who to attack because this is a war on terrorism. Terrorism is not a somebody you fight. Terrorism is a method of attack, a method of demoralizing the enemy. And the idea we are at war with terrorism is as ridiculous as most of the things that has been done since September of last year. You don't fight terrorism simply by going to war with a country, unless, of course, you know that is the country that financed the terrorist. And since most of the terrorists who attacked America last year came from Saudi Arabia and were being financed by Saudi Arabia, and that's just coming out now, why did we go to war with Afghanistan, and why are we going to war with Iraq now? So, you know, there is really nothing that we can do if America is attacked. We no longer have mutual assured destruction. We simply have assured destruction for America and for our way of life.
No argument. And when that day comes, the average person will be ill-prepared to withstand 24 to 48 hours on his own. And there is the problem. They have to start making plans and contingencies for that to happen, because the government is not anywhere near prepared or willing at this point to make preparations for you.
All right, fine. So what you're suggesting is that people are going to have to start making plans now for themselves, for their family, for their loved ones.
That's correct. They need to make contingency plans. Think out where escape routes. Distance will be your friend from any of these threats that we were talking about. How can you put distance between you and the threat very, very quickly? And when you do, what are you going to do once you make that distance? What's going to your day-to-day support won't be there. So stop and think of your vulnerabilities and change the way you view things when you just in your daily routine, where you go. Where you're at all times. You need to know exactly where you're at and where a safe haven or sanctuary may be if something went wrong. In other words, if there was an attack.
Well, of course, we're talking about going to war within the next few months against Iraq. Would they do a preemptive strike at America if they knew we were going to attack them? Would they wait until after the attack, when, of course, it probably wouldn't affect the outcome of the war? Would they try to disrupt us ahead of time if they knew the war was inevitable? And there are certain things that people have to have. What do people need to start getting together now in preparation for the unthinkable? And should it happen, and we can't say with any absolute certainty, but I would say that there is a very good possibility that we're going to see major disruptions in the United States in the not-too-distant future. What sort of things should people start getting together?
Well, your basic necessities. And what do you need on a daily basis? You need food, water, and shelter. Those are your three things that you absolutely need. So make sure you have food and water. You have shelter in the form of your home. But keep in mind that you may be forced from your home.
Well, I would say that the fact that the government is planning on relocation camps would suggest that maybe they know that they're going to have to move major bodies of people, or that the major bodies of people may on their own flee, as they do in other countries, from areas of chaos and crisis. So certainly you would need other things. If you didn't have your home, I think you'd have to know how to create shelter for yourself.
And have the materials to create that shelter and the skills to do that. The average person cannot conceive or even thought of living outside of the comforts of his own home. And when the lights don't work, the panic, the confusion, and the ensuing, chaos.
And really, you know, the tragedy is men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. When we went into Afghanistan, why, of course, the tragic Afghan people had been at war for 20 years as a result of the fact that back in July of 1979, we began financing the Mujahideen, who were the holy warriors there in Afghanistan, who were actually plotting against the Soviet government there, the puppet government. And as a result of the fact that we financed the Mujahideen, the Soviets sent their troops in December of 1979, and that got the Afghan war going. Well, then, of course, many of the people had to flee the fighting. And these people have been fleeing from fighting for 20 years. And they were just getting back to some sort of normalcy. Now, certainly the Taliban were ruthless as far as their treatment of the people, but then so were the Saudi Arabians that we've kept in power for so many years, as far as their treatment of women and as far as their imposition of the Islamic laws. But when we went into Afghanistan to get Osama bin Laden, who we didn't intentionally get, because time and time again there were chances to get him and we absolutely refused. And those of you who haven't seen my video, 9/11 contrived, need to get it and get the source of information that he, Osama and a group of his people were just totally trapped. They were about to be eliminated by the Northern Alliance when in come a fleet of black helicopters and rescues the whole thing. Article comes right out of Newsweek, as I remember. You'll get the exact references in my video. Why were our black helicopters rescuing the Al-Qaeda, the wicked Al-Qaeda, and Osama bin Laden? Well, there are lots of unanswered questions with what's going on. But the point is that these poor people in Afghanistan, these people have been refugees in their own country for 20 years. Could such things happen here in America? Well, I would hope and pray not. But if there were disruptions, what would the American people do? We've never had a situation of chaos here in this country. And yet, of course, we are at least have that potential. And people have to start thinking, if the unthinkable were to happen, what would I do? How would I protect my family? Where would I go? And, of course, how would I survive? And these are the questions that David is raising, and I think that they really need to be raised. Now, certainly a lot of people don't understand that you have to have a means of having light at nighttime. You have to have a means of sanitary facilities. You need medical supplies, at least elementary medical supplies, for yourself and your family. Every family should have these supplies on hand and start collecting them, not a month from now or 3 months from now, but right now, and make sure that you are prepared if the unthinkable should become reality. Would you agree with that, David?
Oh, yes. While these supplies are available to you, any increase in demand on these supplies, in other words, if it doubled or tripled in the next 10 days, if everybody went out and started, just a few percentage points of people attempted to buy some of these supplies that they perceive are needed, the stores would be out. They're just not geared to handle it. So
sure.
Very quietly and very clandestinely, you need to prepare for yourself. It is so late now that only a handful of people can prepare.
Well, I think that people should give some serious consideration to what they would need. Imagine they were going camping, but then, of course, you have to have food, and you have to have the ability to prepare food outside of your own home. And how do you store the food that you're going to be needing? And just hope and pray that this never does happen, and I certainly do, but reading and studying as I have for 40 years, I am more concerned now for the people of this country than I have ever been before. Because never before has there been an internal threat to this country. We could always, of course, send our boys overseas to fight and die, and in other countries, whether it be Korea or Vietnam. But today we have our troops in 140 nations throughout the world. We have troops in almost all of the nations in the Middle East, you know, in the Uzbekistan and Turkmenistan and Azerbaijan and Afghanistan and Pakistan. And we've got troops in all of these countries over there. We have not that many troops here at home. And if chaos were to break out, would they be able to maintain order and the structure of our society? That's one reason that they're now militarizing the police, and you watch your television and whatever, they're going to send the troops in, the police in. They're all dressed with their military helmets and military vests and military rifles, because we're militarizing the police in preparation for them becoming the military if there is a breakdown in law and order in this country. And if you listen to what our leaders are saying, it's not a matter of when the attack comes, but pardon me, if it's going to come, but when it's going to come.
Okay, Stan, take that statement you just made. That tells you that there's something doesn't add up in what we're being told. If they're so sure that disruption is imminent, why aren't they hoisting the flag and having people prepare? The more people are prepared, the less chance of this chaos manifesting itself.
Well, that's why you're doing what you're doing and why I'm doing what I'm doing. You're absolutely right. They should be leading the people in preparation, and they're intentionally not doing it.
Yes, that is the frightening part. When you connect the dots, the picture is not one of honesty. It leaves out the obvious. It's hard to articulate, but once you begin to view it in this context, something is rotten in Denmark.
Well, we know, for instance, that President Bush has told us that there is a shadow government that they have somewhere early on the East Coast that are there to maintain the continuity of government if Washington, D.C. is eliminated. Now, we know that they have these underground shelters for the elite and for certain members of government. But why don't they have anything for the average individual? Well, they figured that the average individual is going to be able to look after themselves, but they're not getting the leadership. Nobody's out there saying, look, here's what you need. You need food, and these are the types of food. You need water, and this is how you'll store the water. These are the things you need for a medical kit. These are the things that that you would need to look after yourself. Maybe you could just stay right in your home. If you live in a sort of a rural area, as I do, we'd be able to function here. But without electricity, if we should lose electric power for more than a few hours, why, of course, we'd lose all the things we have in our freezer, the food that we have there. All of these things you have to begin looking ahead in preparation for how you will manage things. People always say, oh, I have a generator. How many people know how to hook that up so it'll run the things that they need in their house without getting into trouble as far as all the electricity going out into the general grid? People have to begin to think now for the unthinkable.
We're just not being informed enough or given a heads up as to the potential. We're just being kept in the dark, and now dangerously in the dark. The closer we get to this attack on Iraq, which it seems to be more of a certainty than an uncertainty, we are literally at the threshold of a new dawn in this country when it comes to being threatened within the country. And everyone, again, is flat-footed and unprepared for everything coming to a grinding halt.
Well, I hope and pray that our concern is unfounded, but I feel that I would be remiss in what I do if I didn't put on a series of programs making recommendations on your preparation, and we'll be talking with our friend Bill Sardi about how to get your health and immunity improved, and we'll be doing those programs later. You know, they keep talking about the danger of biological attack. Now, I will tell you that our military sent some scientists up to the tundra in Alaska and perhaps other areas to dig up bodies that were frozen there in the permafrost of people who died during the great epidemic of 1918 from the Spanish flu. And they brought those viruses down here and studied their DNA and reproduced those viruses in our laboratories. Why would they do something that stupid? I mean, the virus might get out. It might escape, as we saw has happened in the past. We kept the smallpox, and now we're told, well, there was only two places, but now other people got some of that smallpox. We saw when they were doing experiments on anthrax over in Russia that it got out. Why would we get the Spanish flu virus and start experimenting with it and keep it in our laboratories? Why not let a sleeping dog lie? Why not let a virus where there is none in the world at all? Why not just leave it where it was? Why go out and get that? And then, of course, even more concerning is within this last 10 days, there's been an outbreak of influenza in the Uganda area where many people believe our biological warfare unit tries out its viruses, and 10 500 people have died there recently. They haven't figured out what type of flu it was. I can't help but wonder if it might be the Spanish flu just suddenly coming back again. And, of course, you have to have your immunity up to be able to deal with this on your own, because there certainly are no antibiotics to cure this today that are available to the people.
Exactly. There's just little subtle things you can do. If you need dental work and periodontal work, get it done now, because that, like, your mouth is the opening to the world, and any infections, if you have gum and teeth problems, will just knock you down in no time. The military won't let men go into combat unless they've gotten an okay from the dentist that they're good to go, because a toothache or an infection like that can slow a man down and then a whole squad. Just subtle things like that need to be part of your preparation.
Well, I agree with you, and I think that people need to anticipate, you know, if something's going to happen, you know, I'm going to be in good shape, I have the things that I need, and my family have the things that they need for difficult times.
Yes.
And, of course, the major things would be that we would certainly want to be sure that we had adequate food and water supplies, or at least the ability to make sure that the water we were drinking were safe. And there are things that you can get that will help you with that. If you want to more information, of course, you can contact my ministry. We'll talk about that when we get to the break here in just a few minutes.
Well, it looks like this problem that we're facing is now, as you said, inevitable. That seems to be the push. And given those parameters that we know are potentially going to happen, you now have to take responsibility for yourself and get yourself and your family in a situation that is safer and less vulnerable than they are now.
Well, now, somebody called just a few moments ago and asked, what this is. Is this just sort of another Y2K scare? Well, Y2K wasn't just a scare. There was a real problem. Fortunately, our American ingenuity, was able to control that. They spent billions of dollars sending computer analysts all over the country, and they didn't fix the problem. They simply patched it, and it will last for 50 years until such time as, by then, of course, all the computers with all the problems in it, the Y2K problems, will long since be replaced. But, of course, some people, and many people, did make preparations for Y2K. And I think the people who did certainly are far better off today than the people who made no preparations, thought there was not a problem. But certainly, as we look at the problem that's facing us now, it's not imaginary. It's real. Will it occur? I can't say with any absolute certainty, but as I mentioned earlier, there certainly is a very, very good possibility that something is going to happen. In fact, there are many, many things that can impact upon our society. We're actually facing very real economic problems as far as our nation is concerned, very, very similar to the problems we saw in 1929. That coupled with the threat of Islamic terrorism in this country, and believe me, we're not stopping the Islamic terrorists from coming in to our borders. We have brought in well over 120 to 150,000 people from Islamic terrorist countries since September 11th of last year. We are not stopping them from coming in. We're not even stopping them from coming in from Saudi Arabia until perhaps the last month or two, when we've changed that. So we're not really addressing the problem. We're allowing students to come in from Islamic terrorist countries to attend our colleges because, of course, the colleges want to keep up their enrollment. But what about the safety of America, and how many of these people may, of course, embrace the radical Islamic belief? Not every Muslim is a radical Islamist, but every radical Islamist is certainly a Muslim. We'll be back in just a moment with our special guest, David Sibley. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you believe that we have an important message for the American people, that that they really are involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield, we hope that many of you will want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and you can do that simply by giving us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a free copy of our October newsletter, which is the testimony before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence of Kristen Breitwiser, whose husband, Ron Breitwiser, was killed in the South Tower. Her testimony was one of the most revealing and gripping parts of testimony given before the Senate Investigating Committee. And, of course, unfortunately, the mass media, the people who control what you read and see and hear, saw fit not to disseminate her testimony. So if you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and simply ask for our October newsletter. We'll be glad to send you one free of charge. And then, of course, if you'd like more information on what you might do to begin preparing yourself for what may lie ahead, and of course, I can't say with any certainty, but I can say that there is certainly a good possibility that we're going to be entering some very, very difficult times. And so if you'd like more information on what you can do to begin to prepare, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and simply ask for our a packet of information on preparation for the possibility of a disruption of our society. Just ask them for the special packet we offered this evening on preparation. That's 1-800-544-8927. Then, of course, let me mention our website. It's radioliberty.com. And we hope you'll go there. You can actually get our programs 5 hours a day, either there or through the various links from our website. And we want you to pull down our newsletters and read them and check them out. And we hope that you'll copy the newsletters. You're welcome to copy any of our archive programs there, listen to them, and disseminate them. And you can copy them as many times as you want to help us get the truth out across America. And then, of course, we hope that you'll tell others about our website. Tell them about our program, because it's really up to you to help us disseminate the truth that you're not getting through the controlled media here in America. Most of our great newspapers are controlled by a small group of people. There are newspaper chains across America, so that we really have about 17 chains that control 95% of the daily newspapers in the United States. Four corporations control the major television networks, and unfortunately, the American people are not getting the truth. We'll be back in just a moment with our special guest, David Sibley, and we'll invite your calls here at Radio Liberty at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is David Sibley, and we're talking about preparation for what may very well occur when we attack Iraq. And of course, people don't realize that whatever we do has repercussions. And whenever a nation turns its back on God, God eventually turns his back on that nation. Have we seen time and again through the years where God has used other countries to punish countries that have turned against him? Is there anybody out there in the listening audience after seeing, if you watched Victoria's Secret or even saw glimpses of it on television, that this was not really a pagan ritual? Do you honestly believe that God is glorified by what's going on in America? The pornography, the homosexuality, the anti-Christian message that the children are getting in schools and through the media as a whole. Do you honestly believe that a just God is going to sit back and allow that to happen? Remember those words of Thomas Jefferson, "I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just." and his justice cannot sleep forever. Well, David, you know, of course, I know that you're trying to reach people across America. What sort of response do you get from the public when you talk about the things we're talking about tonight?
I wouldn't say it's indifference. It's more of one of where people, they're confused. They're not sure what to do.
Well, of course, they've been playing with our game, our minds, for years, using the media to confuse us and get us focused on all sorts of unreal things and horror movies. And, you know, you get so emotionally involved in the horror movies that when you face a very real threat, you don't even understand there's a threat out there.
Right. And plus, there are so many things happening now that people are overwhelmed. And this problem that we just discussed with Islam and the way our government's behaving, all of those things said, they're confused. It's overwhelming to most people. They cannot get their arms around it. They can't get it quantified in a box where they can look at it and work it and make it make sense to them.
Well, it really doesn't make sense that if there was really a threat, that the government wouldn't be telling us that and encouraging us to do what would be logical to protect ourselves and our families. You would think that that would be the first thing they would suggest. Well, they've done that for the elite, but not for us common folks. And what they, as they said earlier, we used to have something known as mutual assured destruction. Today, it's simply assured destruction, because if there were to be a nuclear attack in America, why, of course, we would have absolutely no protection for any American other than, of course, the elite, because they do have the underground shelters for them. And as I said earlier, the Russians have shelters for their people. The Chinese communists have shelters for their people. There are no shelters for the Americans. The Swiss have an extensive system of shelters, as do many of the European countries. And you might ask yourself why we have no protection for the American people. Well, one reason is Henry Kissinger. Henry Kissinger, why, he's the man that the president just appointed to look into what happened on September 11th. And Henry Kissinger, negotiating the mutual assured destruction concept, made sure that there'd be no protection for the American people. And I feel so good knowing that he is going to look into what happened on September 11th and get the truth to the American folks. Of course, you can tell when Henry Kissinger is lying, his lips are moving. And I hate to be a little sarcastic, but, you know, if you read our material, in fact, we have copies of an article from West Magazine. It's the story of Marie Strong, and those of you who listen to us regularly remember who Marie Strong is, a multi-billionaire, close friend of Gorbachev's and Stephen Rockefeller. Certainly, Marie Strong helped write the Earth Charter that will replace the Ten Commandments. And now it's been placed into the Ark of Hope. And Marie Strong has a enclave in Colorado. It was called La Baca. And there he and his wife, who is an avowed witch, according to the article in West Magazine, they have set up this enclave where occultists from throughout the world, the witch doctors and the white witch doctors and the shamans and the certainly the medicine men and the yogis and the Hindus and all of the occult leaders from throughout the world come there on a regular basis. And the article commented that there were two people who were very not infrequent visitors. One of them was Robert McNamara. You remember Robert McNamara, the Secretary of Defense, who sent the American boys to fight and bleed and suffer and die in Vietnam, but never to try to win that war. He did everything he could to block trying to win the war. And, of course, Robert McNamara and why we find Henry Kissinger, the two of them not infrequent guests at this occult center in Colorado, La Baca. And, of course, remember, it's Henry Kissinger now who's going to have the trust of the American people and find out what really happened on September 11th. I just can't understand why a Christian president, of all the people in the United States, a Christian president would pick Henry Kissinger, who has, of course, hated throughout the world. Many people considered he's a war criminal. In fact, if he were to travel throughout the world today to leave the United States, there are suggestions he would be arrested and, of course, taken for trial to Spain or other countries which have claimed that he is a war criminal because of his actions in Chile with the revolution there and in Guatemala with the revolution there. And of course, I certainly remember Henry Kissinger during the hearings on the POWs, and he knew that we had abandoned those men in Vietnam because he negotiated to leave them behind. He said he was going to get $4 billion for the North Vietnamese if, at the end of the war, and then they would return the prisoners. And of course, he never got the $4 billion, so they simply kept our men. But during the hearings, when certainly Secretary of Defense, former Secretary of Defense Schlesinger said, we left men behind, and another Assistant Secretary of Defense said, we know we left men behind, and Henry Kissinger said, why, we didn't leave any men behind. And he simply lied before the Senate. But since, of course, they didn't ask him to be sworn in, they asked everybody else to be sworn in, but not Henry Kissinger, because he is such an illustrious individual. Why, of course, they knew he wouldn't lie. Well, we've got real problems in America today, ladies and gentlemen, and it's about time the American people knew that and began to realize that you are responsible for your family. Not the government, not the local authorities. God gave your family to you, and you have to look after one another, and then you've got to be prepared to help others. And if you can't look after yourself, you're certainly not going to be able to help anyone else. If the unthinkable should happen in America, and the threat of the Islamic terrorists who have already talked about attacking America should come to pass, or perhaps the attack will come from another source, it doesn't matter where it comes from, the devastation in this country would be just as great.
There's no argument. And again, people are ill-prepared to withstand just several days without support. And it will be months, in most cases, before any sort of support comes from the government to help ease the pain that you're in. So while what I'm urging now, while the resources are available to those that will do it, is to prepare. Start changing your thought process. Alter your lifestyle. Like you've said, Saddam Hussein has said, when we attack him, they're going to take it to our homes, he said.
Well, now, of course, a lot of people think that's bravado because he made some statements like that back in 1990 and 1991. What people don't understand is he was really deadly serious at that time because at that time, at least according to Joseph Podansky's book, Attack America in the West, there were Islamic cells here. They were ready to be mobilized, but the orders were given by the Iranians and the Syrians not to allow them to be mobilized. They were under Iranian control, and as a result, Saddam Hussein was there, with absolutely no way of retaliating in America. Will that be the case this time? I don't think so. I hope I'm wrong, but those cells are still here. They've been here for the better part of 15 years, just waiting for the word to be given. Could anything be this long-range planning?
Oh,
well,
yes.
It certainly could be. And the fact that you haven't heard this, in fact, you've never heard of the book, and you will have great difficulty getting the book, Attack America and the West, reflects the degree of control that today exists over what the American people think.
Exactly. Saddam Hussein was humiliated in Desert Storm, and he doesn't forget. It seems to be a trait of Arab nations. They don't forget. He's had 11 years to formulate his plan, get his people in position, and by all accounts, it looks like that's exactly what he's done. He will not allow this to happen a second time.
Well, because what's even more interesting is that after the Desert Storm War, the United States brought in somewhere between 3,500 and 8,000 members of Saddam Hussein's Republican Guard and allowed them to settle here in the United States. And all of the evidence suggests that at least some of them were involved in the attack on the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City in 1995, but that fact was suppressed by the American government. After all, how could you admit that you brought these radical Iraqis, members of the Republican Guard, into the United States, and they were involved in the attack on the Murrah Building? So they had to, of course, suppress that information at the Timothy McVeigh's trial, at the trial of Terry Nichols. They had to suppress that information so it could not be known by the American people, and Judge Mates, who actually controlled the trial, would not allow the defense to bring those things up. That's covered in a book by Stephen Jones called Oklahoma City, pardon me, Others Unknown, The Oklahoma City Bombing Conspiracy, That Others Had Known, The Oklahoma City Bombing Conspiracy by Stephen Jones, who is Timothy McVeigh's attorney. So there are those 3,500 to 8,000, I've heard varying figures made, but there's no question that we brought these Islamic radicals, Iraqi radicals, into this country, people who were totally dedicated to Saddam Hussein and allowed them to settle here. Why would we do anything that stupid unintentionally?
That's a very good point. And if you start looking at the track record of our leaders, it seems like one stupid move after another.
You think occasionally they'd make a mistake in our favor, wouldn't you?
Eventually, you know, a blind pig occasionally gets an acorn.
Right.
Something would come our way. But it always fails at your and my expense when it comes to our freedoms, liberty, and safety. And to the point where we're starting to see a pattern here in the form of these guys can't be these biggest screw-ups. It has to be intentional.
Right. Well, I fear that there is an element within our country that has a different loyalty. Their loyalty is to the New World Order and the New World Religion rather than the preservation of this country and its Christian heritage.
It's beginning to look that way. You don't have to look deep or read anything into it at this point. It's quite overt.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. If you have a question, comment, or maybe you disagree. Maybe you think that we shouldn't even be talking about this sort of thing. It's just going to get people upset. But I would tell you, I would far rather get people upset now when, of course, they can do something about this, then simply wait and abide my peace and be popular. But I've never been very popular. I've said what I believe through the years, and, well, I'm not always right, but more times than not. And so I just urge you to contemplate what we're saying and to begin making preparations and hope and pray that everything we say tonight is not true, that nothing happens. But all I can tell you is we live in very, very, very uncertain times, and the government is making preparations for their people. Why not for us? Well, let's go. We've got Michael calling from Spokane. Hi, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm fine, and I'm enjoying your program. I've listened to it for quite some time now.
But you haven't called before, have you?
No, I haven't. This is the first time caller. But I felt really led to let everyone know that I believe that the people of faith, the people who are called by the name of the Lord, need to really be looking out for one another in these times.
I do, too. And, of course, how can we minister to others if we can't even take care of ourselves?
That's right. That's right. And we need to ask God for wisdom, and He will give it, and He will lead people to do the right things in this time, to care for others, and you will just be amazed by the wisdom of God during these days. And, you know, the Bible says, you know, if anyone lacks wisdom, let him ask. And I believe now is really a time for wisdom, because it's very difficult to trust anyone in any position associated with the government, because the WTO is effectively a foreign government trying to establish itself in the United States.
You're talking about the WTO, UN, or what now?
The WTO.
And World Trade Organization, okay.
That's right. Really, okay. Most of the political activities that are going on today are a response to either the willingness or the unwillingness of various nations to become active and engaged in the WTO.
Okay. Of course, the WTO really is to be this supranational organization. If you read, I believe it's Foreign Affairs Magazine, April of 1974, an article by Richard Gardner, he talks about how they will use these trade agreements like agreement on tariff and trade and these international trade agreements to do an end run around the Constitution and bring about this one world government that Richard Gardner and he was, of course, a Rhodes Scholar, and he was appointed by Bill Clinton, I think, as ambassador to Spain, that these internationalists who have no loyalty to America want a world government. They work within the structure of our government, violating their oath of office, because they don't support our Constitution or way of life. They dream a different dream. They want a different world. But I agree with you, and of course, I'm so glad you brought that up, as far as the people of God, because knowing what I know, simply, I'd be scared to death if I didn't have faith in the Lord and realize that my job is to make all the preparations it's up to me and then to pray as if it's up to God.
That's right. And to make sure that you're able to look out for others who need it and ask for it.
Amen to that.
God bless you.
God bless you, too. Thank you so much for calling, okay. Michael. Don't be such a stranger.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. And, you know, it's good to know that people are actually out there listening and being concerned, especially on this holiday weekend when so many people are, of course, on the road and traveling elsewhere. You know, of course, David, you know, you do have a website, and it's readyreservefoodsincorporated.com. That's readyreservefoodsincorporated.com. If anybody would like to get in touch with David, readyreservefoodsincorporated.com. And of course, you can give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And just ask for the packet on suggestions as far as a preparation for what may lie ahead. No one can be absolutely certain, but when I hear that FEMA is making plan for relocation camps for hundreds of thousands of people, and the source would be Newsmax.com, the articles by Chris Ruddy, who I know very well, and I consider a friend and a very reliable reporter, and he, of course, got the information from FEMA. And, of course, he simply quotes their statement saying, well, we don't expect the relocation camps to be in place until the year 2004 and 2005. Why are they planning relocation camps in America? That sounds like what happens in Afghanistan or in other countries, or maybe what's going to happen in Iraq as the civilians there flee the coming war and chaos that we are bringing, because, of course, Willis Saddam Hussein is not a nice guy. And he's not a nice guy. He's a terrible person. But then so are the people who run Saudi Arabia. So are the people who run Pakistan. So are the people who run Algeria. So many of the dictators, like the ones that they have in Kazakhstan and Turkmenistan and Turkestan and Uzbekistan, all who we are keeping in power today. And it's also in Georgia where we're keeping Shevardnadze in power. And he is, of course, simply another communist tyrant. But we're keeping all the communist tyrants in power. In fact, we even have an FBI office in Moscow, and we have sent special forces troops over there to train the people who protect the Soviet hierarchy, just as we've opened an FBI office in Beijing. Why are we opening FBI offices in Beijing? What is really going on today? And, of course, what's really going on is our leaders are not dedicated to the preservation of the United States. They're dedicated to the formation of a new world order and a new world religion. And if you don't believe that, look on the back of your dollar bill, the pyramid capped by the all-seeing eye. And somebody actually sent me the website from DARPA, and I have it. Of course, that is one of the government agencies. And there is that same pyramid capped by the all-seeing eye, of course, looking over the world. And, of course, this is this new computerized agency being set up to monitor the actions of the American people. This is not imaginary. It's real. Anybody would like a copy of that, give me a call. Call 1-800-5-HIV, or we'll send it to you, or you can we can get you the website if you drop me an email at radiolib at AOL.com. But it's up there. I got it. And, it's so difficult to believe so that they would be so blatant as to take that mystical a cult emblem off the back of the dollar bill and attach it to this new computerized program that is going to be monitoring every American citizen. Well, we're just about out of time here. David, what are your parting thoughts for our listeners this evening?
To sit down and reflect on potentially your vulnerability, as your family, yourself and your family. Where are you most vulnerable? Could you possibly go? Can your family survive 1 or 2 months on its own with what you have available to you now? If not, begin to maneuver toward that fairly rapidly, and to be able to sustain yourself and your family, and be able to move from your present position if you have to. Being prepared and then not being able to move out of harm's way and have to leave your preparations behind won't make it either. So start making yourself mobile.
And, of course, the thing is that the major targets of any sort of a terrorist attack would be our major population centers, our major cities throughout this country. And, of course, that would be Seattle probably, Portland, San Francisco, Los Angeles here on the West Coast.
Right.
And for our listeners, most of them are in Spokane. I don't know whether, I do not believe Spokane would be a major target, although we're dealing with irrational people, and who knows what they might do. But certainly people have to be prepared if we were to have a biological attack, because that, of course, could hit every center in the United States. Every community in the United States would be involved, as it was with the Spanish flu back in 1918, where between 20 and 40 million people died throughout the world.
Wow. Isn't that something?
Actually, there were more people died from the Spanish flu than died during the war itself. And that was devastating as it was. About 21 million people died during the war. But, of course, a greater number died of the Spanish flu at that same time. So terrible, terrible suffering. And, of course, I do believe God works in the affairs of men, and God certainly many times moves against nations that have rejected him. And I fear that short of revival in America, which I do not see coming at the present time, God is going to bring judgment upon this country. Well, David, I want to thank you so very much for being with us this evening, and we'll look forward to having you on our other programs in the not-too-distant future.
I'm glad to be here. Thank
God
you
bless
very
you.
Much.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Okay, fine. And if you'd like to get that packet, why, of course, you can contact us at 1-800-544-8927. You can reach David at his website at www.readyreservefoodsincorporated.com. That's foods, F-O-O-D-S, incorporated.com. And then, of course, this is the time when we want to bid adieu to our listeners in the Great Northwest. I hope you had a wonderful and happy Thanksgiving. We have a great deal to be thankful for in this country. We also have a great deal to be concerned about. If you don't have a personal relationship with the Lord right now, why give it serious consideration or call us off the air. We'd be glad to talk to you at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, until Monday, this is Dr. Stan asking you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, and we'll be with you again Monday evening. Until then, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us this evening Mark Smith, and of course we're going to be talking about the men who are left behind in North Vietnam and in Laos, and the prisoners were abandoned after the cessation of hostilities in Vietnam. Thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
It's good to be here with you, Sam.
Well, now, of course, you were retired. You were in the military, and you were actually a prisoner of war of the North Vietnamese for many. How long were you a prisoner of war?
I was only a prisoner for 10 months, but I was in Vietnam for 5 years. Prior to being captured.
All right, fine. And, of course, what was your rank when you were there?
I went up to Vietnam as a sergeant in 1968. General Westmoreland commissioned me a second lieutenant in Tet Offensive. And when I was captured, I was a captain, and I retired in 1985 as a major.
All right, fine. And, of course, you, of course, know what it's like to be a prisoner of the Vietnamese. And my understanding is that you were the first person off the plane when the...
First Army POW off the plane.
Right, and of course that was it, sort of honoring you for your ability to hold out against the efforts to break your will during the time of your imprisonment.
I was told that the Chief of Staff of the Army had selected me to be the first man off the air.
Well, I appreciate that fact. Now, of course, since you came back, you could have gone back to civilian life like most people have, but instead of that, you've been working how many years now to try to get the men we abandoned back?
Well, up until the time that I retired in 1985, of course, when I had 22 years in the U.S. Army, I went back to the military life. And then in 81 to 84, one of our missions was to try and put this thing to bed, basically. And I didn't think there was anyone there that did not wish to be there. And I proved myself wrong. And in 1985, I filed suit against the president and his predecessors for my belief that they had left Americans in Southeast Asia.
Well, now, why did you think that? Why did you think initially that that everybody who was there wanted to be there? And then, what changed your mind that there were men being held against their will in Vietnam and Laos?
Well, my initial impression—you know—we returned prisoners of war pretty full of ourselves. We were the only guys who were really recognized as quote heroes from the Vietnam War. Medal of Honor winners were basically ignored. Other men who served long and served heroically in Vietnam were basically ignored for years. But the POWs, we went to the White House, everything. We were told also by our government that everyone came home except those that didn't want to come home. Well, I knew of at least two who were in my own camp area that did not wish to come home. At least that was the impression I got. One of them a black man and one of them a white man. And so that was what pretty much steeled me. I mean, if they'd let me go after I had fought them for so many years and gave them nothing when I was in prison, then I felt that they would probably let everyone go.
All right, fine. But, of course, what made you change your mind and realize that...
My first government briefing on the issue in December of 1980 in SINCPAC, and then when I went back to Southeast Asia as the first Special Forces unit back into... Thailand since 1976, I was overwhelmed with the evidence that was being ignored that we had, in fact, left Americans in the hands of a cruel and inhumane enemy.
Now, of course, the average American citizen didn't understand that, but you understood it. The media occasionally carry an article suggesting there might be somebody left behind, but then, of course, immediately would discredit it. There was a man named Colonel Bo Greitz who supposedly had gone in there. Did you know Colonel Greitz?
I knew Colonel Greitz very well, and Colonel Greitz and I trained some Afghans together in 1985.
Okay.
And I knew Bo when I was in the Army, and he was always looked on as an outstanding soldier. Part of what I did from 81 to 84 was kind of keep an eye out on, because I was told that Greitz was on an unauthorized mission. But when I checked in with the Royal Thai Army, they had been visited by Americans who said to, from our government, who said to help Bo as much as they could.
In other words, he was basically operating as a civilian, and yet, of course, now we know you've been assigned by President Roosevelt under the auspices of Ross Perot to try to find out if there were still prisoners there. Is that correct?
Exactly right. And the thing that's amazing about this whole thing, and especially the role that the media plays in all of this, they're very quick to jump up and immediately declare stories bizarre and, you know, why would the government do things like this and this and the other. You know, it's a win-win situation for the government in this type of covert operation. If you are successful, they acknowledge it. If you are unsuccessful or something goes wrong, then you are denied.
All right, fine. So, of course, when did Bo actually take those forays into Vietnam or Laos to try to get the men out?
Into Laos, yes.
When was that?
That was, the first one was, he began to crank up in 81, 82 crank time frame. He went twice between 81 and 84. And then later went up to visit Khun Sa, the opium warlord who claimed that he had information on POWs and MIAs. But I don't know exactly what he found out about POWs and MIAs up in Burma, but he did find out an awful lot about involvement of some U.S. operatives in the drug trade.
And, of course, this went to the very highest levels of our government, involved in getting the drugs out of Burma and, of course, bringing them into the United States and throughout the world. In fact, one of the men who was identified is today the Assistant Secretary of State in the Bush administration.
That's right.
A man named Richard Armitage. So the American people, of course, very few of them know that, but, of course, the name of Richard Armitage is well known to those who studied the adventures of Bo Greitz over there. So,
or in the Vietnamese community, Richard Armitage is known as Mr. Phu.
What does Mr. Phu mean?
That was his godfather name within the Vietnamese community.
No, but was that having to do with drugs, or just simply because he's
such
a big...
At least from what the Vietnamese claimed, was an almost a gangster-like mentality. If you recall, our current Assistant Secretary of State had a mistress that he wrote letters on Department of Defense stationery stating that she was a good woman and so on and so forth, and that the police who had her in custody should basically let her go. She was arrested for illegal gambling and pandering to prostitution. So that's the level, that's the type of individual, the base type individuals that have been involved in this thing for many, many years.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost as if the people that do get involved in it, that they have to have something on them. If you look at the people who for years served up in the POW MIA office, every time a named soldier was assigned there, like Colonel Peck, when General Tai was supervising, and after he left, totally appalled by what he had seen. But you look at Colonel Peck, you look at Commander Chip Beck, the Navy SEAL, who was assigned to that office.
Now, this was the office.
Named men.
This was the office. It was trying to track
theoretically
the abandoned. Right.
Theoretically trying to track them.
Right.
But if you look at those guys, Colonel Bob Howard, my boss, America's most decorated soldier, every time a real soldier or a real Navy SEAL or a real airman or a real combat guy from our military ever got close to this thing and looked at it, the reaction was violent.
In other words, they realized that the American people were being lied to, and we simply abandoned our fighting men.
Absolutely.
All right, fine. Well, now, of course, then you went back over to Thailand. When did you go back over there to try to find out what really had happened?
Well, in 1985, I filed suit against the president, and I was on all the TV shows, 2020, 60 Minutes, Donahue.
Now, of course, this was President Reagan, the very, very popular...
That's right, my favorite president of all.
No, fine, but, of course, were you trying to get him to try to do something? He always talked a good game. He always said the right things.
I was. But, you know, presidents are... and I think Ronald Reagan was an outstanding president and brought us back from... after what we suffered through with Jimmy Carter... and appeasement of everyone in the world, brought us back and won the Cold War. And but the problem was that presidents know exactly what their advisors tell them. I actually sued him initially to get his attention, but then it proved to be an impossible task. And after a while, it became obvious to me that what I was becoming here in the States as a plaintiff in Smith versus Reagan was a personality. And there was plenty of glory and talk shows and this, that, and the other, but it wasn't a very real life. And so...
Pardon me, are you by any chance on a cell phone or a hand? Are you on a hard line?
Yes, actually, I was outside and it just started raining.
Okay, fine.
Can you hear me better now?
Yes, are you on a regular telephone?
Yes, I'm on a handheld phone.
Could you get on a regular telephone? We'd get a much better tone if you were.
Well, right now I don't. Actually, my family doesn't have one of those.
All right, fine. Well, then we'll just keep up what we've got.
Okay.
Hope the battery holds out for us.
Right. Well, they have another one available if it doesn't.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, of course, you decided to go back to Thailand and try to find out from there. And when did you go back?
I went back in 1985.
And you've been there ever since?
Yes, and at one point I was there for 7 years and did not return to the States for 7 years, which people immediately began to think that that's because I was totally dissatisfied with my country or something like that. No, I was busy working on this and trying to assist in the areas of counterterrorism with the Thais and other countries in the region.
Now, of course, then you're working with the people in Thailand who are really under a siege themselves, aren't they, from terrorist organizations?
Absolutely. And the, it's a well-known fact within the military circles within Southeast Asia that America left its fighting men in the hands of a cruel and inhumane enemy. And our politicians and the government appointees can get up and whine and talk all they want. But that's just a fact.
Well, then how do the military feel about this? Because, you know, military men are willing to fight for their country and die for their country, but they're not prepared to be betrayed by their country and their politicians. And the people back home are more interested in Monday Night Football than the boys we abandoned.
Well, we're blessed with a great youth in this nation who are willing to fight. And so they keep marching out and they keep volunteering. But what it has done to us is that it has created a total lack of trust within the hearts and minds of many of our allies. And that's why we have a little trouble with them sometimes when we decide to do something, because they think we're not good for the long haul anymore. I mean, if we won't care about our own people, we certainly are not going to care about their soldiers if something happens.
Well, of course, the French did everything they could to repatriate their men who were in Dien Bien Phu, who were captured by the North Vietnamese. And they were, as many of those were released, what, 10, 20 years later?
Absolutely.
Did they get all of them out eventually?
Well, I'm not sure that they got them all out. I don't think so. But you see, the Vietnamese were very smart at holding governments hostage, virtual hostages, to this issue, because no government would want to admit that it left its soldiers in a foreign land. And so the French started out in 1954 paying $1 million a year, and everybody says that's not much money. In 1954 it was a lot of money, for the maintenance of French graves. And down through the years, the Vietnamese quietly returned French life, prisoners of war, and remains to the French for the payment of money. And at the end, they were down in the 80s to legionnaires. The last that I know of was a Spanish legionnaire who came out through Thailand in the early 80s.
Well, at least they had the integrity to get their men out. Now, of course, the Vietnamese would have released our prisoners. We'd given them the money that Henry Kissinger promised them. But, of course, we never gave them the money. Henry Kissinger never had the integrity to tell the American people about the bargain with the devil that he'd made in Paris. He seemed very good, but he never told the American people. He promised to give the North Vietnamese $4 billion. And because he didn't give them the money he promised, they kept our men. Is that true?
Well, yes, but there's a two sides to that sword also. The North Vietnamese, of course, didn't hold up their end of the bargain in the peace agreement either. They signed a solemn agreement in 73, and by 75, they overran the country.
Well, just why would we ever expect to tell the truth?
Exactly right, and we got taken to the cleaners on that. But I think what happened within our government was, rather than just admitting that this had happened and go there and say, listen, we know you have our people, what's it going to take to get them back? What we did was decide that it was an insurmountable problem and we couldn't deal with it.
And, of course, both Kissinger and, of course, I will never forgive Richard Nixon for lying to the American people and insisting all those troops were out when he knew it wasn't true. I mean, I could forgive him for Watergate, but I could never forgive him for betraying the American boys.
I think also, but when you talk about the presidency, in many, many cases, and I think it's the same with Ronald Reagan, who I think was a great president, but I think that they know exactly what people like Kissinger and the people within some of the intelligence agencies tell them. And Americans make a great misinterpretation of people in military uniform. We have a lot of people at the rank of colonel and above who have never been anything but clerks for their entire careers. And those are the kind of people that are easily bought off and easy to make trades with up there when it comes to the lives of combat soldiers. Because they basically have always considered men who seek combat and who serve this nation in combat as being fools anyway.
Right. I think you're going to have to get that other telephone here in a couple of minutes. This one's maybe they can get this one on charging while we're talking on the other one. Of course, there really is so really disheartening to know that this has gone on. And, of course, if we were to hear every day about the boys we abandoned in Vietnam, why, there would be an outcry from the American people and the demand that something be done. But, of course, we don't hear about it every day. In fact, we very, very rarely hear about it anymore. And those men have been totally forgotten. Do we have any idea how many there still may be there today? Do you have any idea?
Well, at one point, and it's been a much... Let me try to switch to another phone now.
Okay.
How do you hear me now?
Oh, you're better, right.
Okay.
Let's get the other one on there charging.
What has happened is that at one point the North Vietnamese themselves and some of the people who in fact had dealt with my own capture told me that they had over 500 people. But this was a variety of individuals, and some of them that they weren't even sure if they were Americans or what they were.
Would they perhaps CIA operatives,
Sure, because we had a number, especially in Laos, a number of people from a number of different countries working for, agencies of the U.S. government, during the war. But one of the things that is always appalled me was the idea that some people appeared to have been sent in after 73 and then not acknowledged that they were even there. And when they went missing, no one knew basically who they were.
Well, but these were CIA operatives, weren't they, or black ops?
Some of them appeared to be military people, special forces.
Oh, of course, a lot of them, of course, they take out of the special forces, they sheep-dip them, and then they use them on these covert operations.
Exactly. But, recently I was down in, while I was back here, I had to go down to the Vietnamese community because there are active agents being sent from Vietnam to cause problems within the Vietnamese community here in America.
You mean there are our good friends, the North Vietnamese, who are subsizing at the present time and giving
them... That's what they're using all that money we're giving them.
Right. And they're sending their agents over here. What are they doing? Are they terrorizing and intimidating the Vietnamese here?
Absolutely. And they're collecting an awful lot of money over here. Some of it under bogus political schemes, some of it under bogus resistance schemes. And I went down and I was to confront one of them on behalf of the Thais, who said they did not want him back in Thailand again because of problems that he had caused. This is the individual who directed the throwing of the bombs that didn't go off at the Vietnamese embassy. You recall that incident?
No, I really don't. Was this in Southern
Bangkok.
California?
No, in Bangkok.
Oh, in Bangkok, okay.
And then they recently caught another one of his operatives in the Philippines with the makings of a bomb. But he hadn't got it together yet to throw that bomb. You know, the Thailand and the Philippines are our friends.
Oh, no, of course. Are these Islamic terrorists or what?
Well, what they are is they're people under the guise of being resistance. They are people who are taking these terrorist acts in friendly countries against Vietnamese targets, but under the direction of the Vietnamese. These bombs never go off.
In other words, it's all a show.
It's all a scam. But see, what they do is they find a young man who wants to fight for his country, and they tell him, this is what you have to do. They send him, and then they give him up. And what it does is that makes our friends in Southeast Asia extremely nervous because suddenly they have right-wing terrorists running around.
Okay.
And or either people who appear to be right-wing terrorists.
And then I suppose they're willing to accept more American supervision for what's going on? Is that how
Absolutely.
Does it work?
Absolutely.
And so basically then we have increased control over those countries as well.
Yes, and you know, we're the ones who are preaching that we should all be friends with the Chinese and the Vietnamese over there.
Right. Well, you know, the thing that really disturbed me so much, Mark, was the fact that, you know, when the Vietnamese were desperate for trade relations with the United States to try to increase their economy, and at that point we get a said, will you give us back our men, and we, of course, will give you most favored nation treaty status or allow you to begin exporting your products over here, allow you to borrow money, or we'll even give you money. Instead of doing that, why we simply gave them the trade rights without demanding we get our men back. Why would we do something that stupid?
It was just, I'll tell you what I think really happened. If you recall, Watergate kind of shocked everyone. And what happened was that the North Vietnamese were scared to death of Richard Nixon, to be completely frank. Because he proved to them in 1972 that he would bomb them until they gave up, and they basically did, and signed that agreement in January of 73. The North Vietnamese initially kept these men as hostages so that they would still be able to do what they wanted to do, but get the money. But when Nixon disappeared off of the stage, Gerry Ford came in after him, his hands totally tied. If you recall that time, no American president wasn't allowed to do a thing. And then Carter came in, and the Iran and everything else.
And he, of course, brought the Ayatollah to power in Iran. He actually brought the Sandinista to power in Nicaragua. We couldn't
Absolutely.
Have had a worse president than Jimmy Carter.
And he's still running around the world today trying to do the same thing. And the thing that's amazing is that Americans, the liberal left in America, never has understood. There's a certain amount of people in the world that really do need to fear us. They will never be our friends. They have ideologies that will never be friendly to our type of government. They have religions that will never be friendly to our basically Judeo-Christian beliefs in this country. And those people need to fear us. And I think since September 11th, there are more of them who do
All right. Well, let's, of course, talk a little bit about your work as far as the men in, who are still left behind. I know you probably can't cover a lot of that because of, you know, you would endanger your lives and the men's lives and the lives of some of the people who are working with you. But my understanding is that you have some men over there in Vietnam who are actually working with you, gathering evidence to this day of the men we left behind.
Absolutely.
Now,
and,
at all, do you get any help at all from the American government?
None.
Okay, and of course, there's been sort of an effort to discredit you, saying that, of course, you're raising money from the bereaved widows and orphans of the men who were abandoned, and this is really to discredit you because there are people in this country who don't want you to bring out the truth. Is that the case?
Absolutely. You know, and this happened as late as last week, where Colonel Joe Slatter, a former worker B up in the office, the POWMIA office, who has gotten out and has made it his business to try to discredit anyone who speaks of live prisoners. Colonel Joe Slatter, who wouldn't know a battlefield if it walked up and kissed him on the mouth, has been saying, well, you know, this is all about money. Mark Smith has enriched himself. Mark Smith... Well, you know, it, basically, in my case, it certainly is laughable to think that I have enriched myself in any way off of the POWMIA issue. It's an issue that if you decide to get into it, you better be prepared to have your life destroyed as you used to know it.
And so you have your military pension and you live on that? And...
Exactly right.
And I, for instance, let me tell you a little bit of what I know about Mark Smith. Monica Jensen Stevenson is one of my favorite guests, and he's been with us many times. We've talked about her books, The Boys We Left Behind, Kiss the Boys Goodbye, and Spite House. And apparently, she was your neighbor there in Thailand for some years when her husband was over there researching his book.
Yes, he was researching a book about the King of Thailand at the invitation of the King of Thailand.
Right.
And... it was amazing just to watch, you know, that going on. But yeah. She can speak directly to how I lived and what I did while I was there.
Well, she was the one, of course, told me I should get hold of you. In fact, I should have you on rather than her because you could speak firsthand about this whole episode. And of course, she could only speak secondhand through her writing and through her work. So it was because Monica asked me to get hold of you. And she told me about, of course, how you were being attacked and vilified and she'd seen you over there and the way that you had to live. And, of course, you know, you had a little crew of some men, and you just sort of lived on rice and lived just like the Thai people.
Exactly.
So that you'd have enough funds to continue trying to find out what happened.
Exactly. And the thing is, we do not have an organization. We do not solicit funds. And for somebody like Colonel Joe Slatter, you know what I would like for people to ask sometime if they ever believe people like Colonel Joe Slatter is ask him to put on his website himself in his official Department of the Army photo in his Class A uniform. And then I will send him to his website my official Department of the Army photo in my Class A uniform. Your Class A uniform is a roadmap to who you are and what you are.
You're talking about the medals you have?
Exactly right. And you will look at Colonel Joe Slatter and see that he's a lesser man and a lesser soldier than I will ever be in my life. He's a lesser man than Bo Greitz will ever be. He's certainly a lesser man than Colonel Bob Howard. He's a much lesser man than Colonel Mike Peck or Commander Chip Beck. This is a nobody of war.
Yes, but of course the thing is that his job is to discredit you. That's what he's doing.
But, you know, he's retired now. And he does it under the guise of Christianity. He's out here building houses for the poor with your friend Jimmy Carter.
Right. Well, of course, the last thing they want is the American people to realize what hypocrites they are. And the last thing they want the military to know is when you go into battle, why, you may very well be betrayed by your commander-in-chief and his underlings. Now, you know, as far as the men who are still there, do we have any idea? I mean, you mentioned 500. Do you think there might still be 500 alive in Laos?
Well, I think that nobody works harder at keeping these men alive than the communists.
You really think that they want to keep them alive? Do you think they hope one day they're going to be able to get some money for
exactly.
them?
Exactly. And, you know, recently, or within the last couple of years, documentation, and the United States government knows, this documentation has come out from region number 5, which is the administrative region for detained persons in Vietnam. Though our own intelligence agency will tell you it's a geographical region, its only job is to take care of detained persons.
I'm going to have to interrupt you. We're going to have to take a break. We'll be right back here with Mark Smith. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we hope that many of you will decide right now that you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do, 5 hours every weekday, 5 hours on the radio, 5 hours on the Internet, 3 hours on satellite, 2 hours on shortwave, but believe me, it gets pretty expensive every month when those bills come in, and so we depend upon the people out there who believe in what we're doing to help us on a regular basis, so we can continue doing what we're doing and gradually expanding, and right now we're on over almost 50 outlets across America every single week. Not as many as I'd like to be, but certainly enough so that at least people are beginning to hear the truth, the news behind the news, the story behind the story, the information that Barbara Walters and the establishment communicasters are not going to tell them. And so if you are out there and you are listening to this program, we hope that maybe you'll want to just join with us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure, whether people can live free, or whether that freedom will simply become a remembrance of things past. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, if you'd like a free copy of my October newsletter, which is, of course, the testimony of Christine Breitweiser, whose husband, Kristen Breitweiser, whose husband, Ron Breitweiser, died in the South Tower on September 11th last year. Her testimony was given before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence on the 18th of September of this year. The television cameras were rolling. The reporters were all there taking notes. But, of course, what she said was not widely publicized because, you see, when you hear what she said, when you understand the significance of what she said, you realize, of course, that most of what we've been told about September 11th is not true. And so if you'd like a free copy of my October newsletter, which is simply Kristen Breitweiser's testimony before the Senate Select Committee, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'd love to get you a copy and hope that you'll read it and duplicate it and get it out to 100 people or get it out to as many people as you can, because we are in a race against time to inform the American people about the truth of what's going on in America today. Again, the number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Please go to our website at radioliberty.com, and you can get our programs there. Many of them are archived. You can listen live 5 hours a day, either at Radio Liberty or, of course, on the American Freedom Network or in the Genesis Network, and get our programs on a regular basis. And then help us to disseminate the truth across America, from sea to shining sea. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest this evening, Mark Smith. And, of course, we will be glad to take your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Mark Smith, the retired major in the military. And, of course, we were talking about the fact that the Vietnamese really have an area where they keep our prisoners of war. And he was saying that he feels that they're probably being fairly well kept because, of course, they still have hopes of ransoming them for money. Is that true?
That's right. And I think there's also been a shift within the Vietnamese government. Where they know that this will, at some point, it must come back to haunt everyone. And in the meetings that we've had with them, I say, blame the old leadership.
But of course,
be the champion that does this thing.
But of course, our leaders don't want them back. Our president doesn't want them back. Certainly the last, Bill Clinton didn't want them back.
Oh,
George W. Bush, Herbert Walker Bush didn't want them back. They do not want the American people to know of the degree of treachery that's gone on, because that would cause a lot of people not to believe anything that our leaders tell us. So do you really think that the our leadership is doing anything at all to get them back today?
No, I do not. And I think that, but again, I think it comes back to, we all talk about presidents, but there is a group of people who have handled this from day one. And that group of people are the very worst of the worst that this nation has to offer.
What would you say about Henry Kissinger? Where does he fit into this whole picture?
You know, the thing that amazes me is that when we returned POWs, came back in 73, we all looked on Dr. Kissinger as a hero. But we didn't know about the behind, we didn't know about a decent interval and things like that, where all that we had suffered for and that our soldiers and airmen and sailors had died for was going to be given away after a decent interval of time had expired.
In other words, they knew that they were going to let the Vietnamese take over the rest of the country and not do
Absolutely.
Anything at all about it. But it had to be in a decent interval, because we wouldn't want, of course, to offend the sensibilities of the American people and let them know that the boys who fought and died in Vietnam fought and died for nothing.
Exactly right. And, you know, the Congress certainly has its share of the blame. If you remember how they cut off every penny going to the Vietnamese as they fought for their lives in 1975. If you go to that country today, people still have the courage to come up to you on the street and not challenge you, not belittle you. Even former Viet Cong have said to me on the streets of Saigon, we should have joined you. They have seen communism up front, face to face, and no one wants it.
And yet, of course, we're doing everything we can to, provide markets for their goods and lending them large amounts of money. We're doing everything we can to keep the communists in power over there. That's
I was
incredible.
Talking to a Thai leader recently, and he said, you know, the only reason that communism still is able to stay in Southeast Asia because it's being propped up by your own government.
Well, of course, that's what people really don't know about what happened in Russia. We started financing the Russians in 1918. We brought the communists to power in China back in 1950. People don't know that. They don't know that we put arms embargo on Chiang Kai-shek so we couldn't buy weapons any place in the world. And when Congress voted $125 million for supplies for them, was several billion dollars in military supplies, modern-day standards, and the State Department wouldn't deliver them. And when the rifles finally arrived, the crates of rifles arrived in China 2 years later, why, of course, there weren't any bolts in the rifles. They were useless. We brought communism to China. We've kept communism going. We're financing communism in China today. And something's wrong with this picture. The American people can't understand what's going on. I get questions all the time. I mean, you know, about Bill Kissinger, Bill Clinton, transferring all this military technology, sophisticated military and missile technology that the communists were, you know, these campaign contributions. And I say, if you really Excellent. Believe Bill Clinton did this for a couple of $100,000, you are incredibly naive. There is another agenda, but that's a little bit beyond the scope of this program tonight. But are people aware of this over in Southeast Asia?
There's jokes that in Southeast Asia where people say they couldn't figure out if Bill Clinton was running for president of the USA are running to be the mayor of Beijing because of all the illegal Chinese money flowing into Bill Clinton's campaign.
Well, the people over there, you need to get them listening to our radio program. They can get it over there on the Internet at RadioLiberty.com, and if they listen long enough, they'll begin to understand what's really going on. So if you have a chance, why give us a plug. It's simply RadioLiberty.com. Over there, of course, we have shortwave and we have radio outlets across America. But the amazing thing is through the miracle of the Internet, we have listeners all over the world, and we just need a lot more to get them educated, to begin to understand that behind all of the machinations and all the things that are going on, there are other forces that most people have no glimpse of at all.
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, could I just tell you one more thing?
Sure, you go right ahead.
If you remember in 1979, a young Marine private, PFC, by the name of Robert Garwood, came back to the United States.
Right, huh?
He's probably one of the few Americans who ever rescued himself from a prison camp.
Well, he had to, because he certainly wasn't going to get any help from our government.
Exactly right. And he was then tried for collaboration. He was convicted of collaboration. He was tried as a traitor. He's tried as a deserter, and of course, those charges did not stand up against him because there was ample evidence that they were not true. But the amazing thing is that the enemy has used that against our remaining prisoners of war at pointing at Garwood and saying, this is what happens to people who even think about going back to the United States of America.
Well, I've interviewed Bobby Cardwood several times. He was told before he was released by his North Vietnamese captors that he would regret ever coming home because they knew what was going to happen to him. It was almost as if there was an agreement between the North Vietnamese and our own military forces.
Absolutely.
That Bobby Cardwood was to be persecuted for coming home. No man was to ever escape, of course. And that must be terribly demoralizing for the boys who are still over there.
Absolutely. And, you know, there was collaboration within the prison camps. There is no doubt about that. But, we always start at the high level. That's what makes the military work. The highest level collaborator is the guy who gets tried first. It would have taken a long time to get down to a private, even if Garwood did what they said he did.
Well, I heard that, of course, John McCain, now Senator John McCain, really worked very closely with the communists. Have you heard that?
No, I'll tell you what my belief on John McCain is that John McCain was in terrible condition when he was captured. But I think that it's a given that he received first-class medical attention. How did they know that John McCain was Admiral McCain's son? Was that because they just saw his name? No, there was only one person that could have told them that. And that was a violation right off the bat. If you read some of the interviews that John gave, he went across the line in what he said while he was in a Vietnamese prison camp. And the thing is, when I was asked to support him for president, and it hurt me to say this, quite frankly, to any fellow returned prisoner of war, if I had to read what you wrote or I heard you on the radio, I'm very sorry, no matter what you may have suffered, you're not going to be the president of my country and the commander-in-chief of the armed forces telling young soldiers that you can't do that if you're captured. That's my stance on John McCain.
Okay, well, we'll leave it at that.
And also, one thing on John McCain that I will go further on is that if you ever in any way broke, if you ever accepted special treatment, you had no right to say a word about that Marine private named Bobby Garwood.
Right. Well, let's get back. Now, you're talking about the men. You've actually had negotiations or talks with the Vietnamese about the men they still have?
With the Vietnamese military.
With the Vietnamese military.
That's right.
And, of course, what is their stance?
Well, they know that the main obstacle is the old hardline Communist Party members who do, in fact, know from their meetings with Americans what will happen if they release people.
Well, now, what would happen to the old line communists if they did release the people and allowed the boys to come home?
You know, in negotiations, Dr. Stan, you do it two ways. You go and you negotiate and you say, do you have these people? Or do you go and you negotiate and you say, you better not have these people? Because if you do, that would be a war crime. That's how the door was shut initially, and that's what's kept the door shut all along.
But you think that that was done intentionally by our people? In other words, because we did not want them to come home. That's what's so difficult for the average American, even for me, to believe, is that there would be people who would be that crashed, indifferent to suffering, who would not want our men home.
Well, you know, we are a nation. You would think that Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter's socialist state actually did evolve, because it's the this theory of we're going to only do what's good for all of us, for the society, for the party, rather than what this nation was founded on, which is we do what's right for the individual. It's the individual in this country that has the rights, not the president, not society. But what's good for the individual is what has made this nation great.
Right. So you think that the military, of course, would be glad to let them go if, do they want money, or simply are they waiting for the okay from the politicians?
I think that the military, some of the military at this point, you know, everyone loves money. And the way the government overcomes the money thing is to, if you say there was a reward of $2.4 million for an American prisoner of war, as you remember that reward some years ago, then all of a sudden all of this information is put into the system claiming that there are people who will pay $10 million. So the job never gets done. I actually initially did not agree with the monetary reward. And I think that in 81 to 84 that we were extremely close to bringing American prisoners of war home. And it would have only taken one or two at that point, and then we could have threatened the North Vietnamese, and they would have had to have allowed them to come home with Ronald Reagan as President of the United States. He feared Ronald Reagan. But then the bureaucrats who perpetrated this crime in this country, we would have had to get nets to keep them and catch them falling out of the windows in Washington, D.C.
Well, I remember talking, interviewing Colonel Bo Greitz, and, you know, he said that, of course, when he went in, actually into, and I guess it was into Laos,
yes,
that actually our government began broadcasting to the communists, letting them know that he was there, and almost got him killed. In other words, the voice of Southeast Asia, or voice of America, whatever it was letting the communists know his every movement, identified him, gave them his coordinates. It was almost as if there were people here that wanted to get him captured or killed, and he was very bitter about that. Did you ever hear that story?
I heard, not only heard that story, but I experienced it myself in 1987 and in 1988. And in 1988, I took a TV over with a long antenna to allow the Laotian guerrillas who were helping me on the POWMIA issue to see what the rest of the world looked like. And we had the TV on, and on came a statesman, or a spokesman for the State Department, stating that the United States government wanted it known that they had nothing to do with the American who was in Laos, at that southern Laos at that time, ostensibly looking for Americans still missing from the Vietnam War.
Now, they were talking about Bo Greitz.
They were talking about me then.
Oh, they were talking about you.
So when Bo Greitz tells you that happened, you can put it in the bank. They didn't just do it to Bo. They did it to me twice.
In other words, they wanted to get you killed.
Exactly right. You know, and the thing that's amazing about that is that it was some of the same people who, while I was missing and in prison, swore to my mother that they would do everything to make sure that nothing happened to me.
Now, these were people in the military or what?
No, they were people. You know, that POWMIA office, those faces haven't changed since 1973 in many cases.
You mean some of the people, same people are still there?
Trowbridge, DeWitt, all of these guys were there in 1973.
So they've been
at one point military, they evolved into civilians, Paul Mather. The only person he ever got out of Vietnam was his own wife, who used to be a dishwasher in a mess hall.
This is 30 years you're talking about.
Yes, but even now.
Now, what about these POW organizations, you know, organizations of families? It seems to me that, you know, some of them are very good, but I have almost a feeling that some of them have been infiltrated and are simply doing a lot of busy work, but at least it's almost like they've been neutralized, a conscious effort to discourage the families and keep them from doing anything.
It came down, you know, it was amazing to me, and I said this one time, to Ann Mills Griffith from the National League of Families, who worked tirelessly at one point to bring home American prisoners of war. I said, Ann, you cease to be a family member and you become a Republican, which is basically my own political persuasion. But, you know, no Republican president was going to suffer the indignity of having American prisoners of war come home on Ann Mills Griffith's watch. And that is the leader of the National League of Families. Now we have the National Alliance of Families, which broke off with Dolores Alphonse, who have said they didn't care who was in office, what political party in America was running the show, that it had to get done because men were dying. And in both groups, there are people who work tirelessly, you know, to try and find out what happened to their own relatives. And they have been used by every president, by every politician. If you notice, when we got ready to look at Iraq, we started talking about, guess what? We just found out that one of our pilots was alive on the ground.
I thought that was the ultimate in hypocrisy. I mean, they wrote this man off 10 years ago to die in Saddam Hussein's prisons. And then, of course, when they could use him, suddenly they reclassified him from dead to missing in action.
Exactly. And, you know, they speak a lot about the, and there are people out there who are charlatans who have used the POWMI issue to make money. But I'll tell you what, no one has ever used it more than the United States government. Every time there's a downtime, they say, well, let's not forget we got missing men over there, and that's our highest national priority.
And, of course, it's total hypocrisy. The last thing that they want is for him to come home, and I don't know if you've... We've interviewed a number of people who pointed out that when Yeltsin wanted to give information, Premier Yeltsin of Russia, give information to the American people about people in Soviet prison camps, he was told by our State Department, we did not want those men to come home.
He was labeled a drunk and a fool.
Right. And the people find it difficult to believe that anything could be that evil, but unfortunately it is.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, the thing that just amazes me is that there's plenty of reasons to point to Saddam Hussein and say there is an evil individual. And there's a man who sponsored terrorism around the world. But to take and drag up the Spiker case and say, now we're going to go look for our pilot. They had to tell us what happened to our pilot. What have they been doing all these years? And you know, the worst thing that you have to really think about is when these men finally do come out, if it's 501 or 200 or 5, whatever the number, what in God's name are they going to think about us? What are they going to tell us? And how are we actually going to be ashamed, or are we just going to change to the next channel on the TV? We as a nation, not just our government, but we as a nation have not cared for these men. And we as a nation failed these men. Because when mothers give their sons to go to the military and defend this country, we as a nation take responsibility for them. And the media, as part of this nation, even though you wouldn't think that at times, has failed miserably on this subject. And no one is more anti-live POW than the media of our country, because they know that they failed those men, their mothers, and this nation.
You're absolutely right. This is why I do what I do 5 hours a day, and we very frequently will bring this up, whether we have Joe Douglas or so many of the people out there who still talk on this subject and keep trying to keep it before the American people. I've talked to some of the people, though, who've worked at it, and they've simply given up. There was a wonderful book called Moscow Bound. And I tried to, man has spent years studying that. You probably know who he is.
Absolutely.
And, you know.
John M.G. Brown.
Right. And I talked to him. He said, I can't do it. I can't go on the radio. I'm burned out. I'm too emotionally distraught after spending all these years working and finding out that nobody cares.
Well, there are people that care.
Oh, of course there are people that care. And
what's
care and you care.
Amazing is that most of them, you know, right now on this issue, there are more foreigners in Southeast Asia working on it than there are Americans. And their greatest fear is that if this isn't corrected, that America will never be a dependable ally. Because they will always be hostage to this. Just as our politicians bring up the MIAs when they're running for office or they need a political win, you know, the communists do the same thing against their own people. But these people in Southeast Asia also know that every time that they want to take a stand against the communists in Southeast Asia, the communists point at those POWs and say, and this is the ally you're depending on to back you up. The far-reaching implications of what has happened because of the MIA situation are immense and go far beyond anything that our political leaders would ever want us to know.
Well, do you have any other American allies over there who are working with you, or are you pretty much on your own with the ties and other foreigners who agree with you that we need to get our men out?
Yes, I do. And I've had one man who, a former Air Force enlisted man, named Buzz Parrish, who finally just pulled up stakes and came back to Southeast Asia to work full-time with me on this. And contrary to the Joe Slatters of the world, nobody gets paid. And yet they put their nose to the grindstone and they're out there working. There are other Americans who have done the same thing. There are other Americans who are old Southeast Asia hands who are ready to step into the breach and aid and help whenever they find out that, or whenever I ask them to assist and go someplace, make a meeting, or this, that, and the other. But no one has served as well as the people of Southeast Asia, especially the Thais, who, if you listen to the American government, they'll tell you that it's all part of a Thai scam, it's all part of this, that, and the other. Well, you know, at some point they would have to get money if it was a scam. And they have been, there are men within Thailand who have been working diligently on this on behalf of our American prisoners of war since 1975.
It's a shame that there aren't more Americans here at home who really care. Well, we're going to keep this before them. I hope when you get to home here next time, why you'll give us a call and we can get you back on our programs again. And you can rest assured that we're a small voice, but we'll be out there every week to 10 days putting on another program, trying to keep this before the American people all the time. Is there anything finally you'd like to say? We're just about out of time.
I'd just like to say that I still consider this to be the greatest country on the face of the earth. And this is something that needs to be done. And that if, for people to at least seek information and deal with it with reason and do not tolerate fools easily, such as Colonel Joe Slatter on this issue.
Well, God bless you. Have a safe trip back over there. You're going back tomorrow?
I'm going back tomorrow. And God bless you, Dr. Stan, and God bless America.
Amen. Good night.
Good night.
Okay, fine. That was a very, very courageous military man who's given his life in this battle. Should we do less? And so until Monday when we'll be back with you, please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray that somebody will really care about those boys. Pray for their safety and pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and our protection. And so until Monday, good night. May the Lord be with you.
America, my home. she said she was Neil's voice, and she wanted to talk to you off the air. He's the one you called anti-Semitic. He's a dentist. He's your age, he says, and he's around 70. But I said, okay, I'm going to take your name down and your telephone number, and I'll give it to Dr. Sam.
Oh, thank you. There you go.
See, that's what happens when you put things underneath the table.
I know. I